19 hours 30 UTC on Tuesday, January 16th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
And I'm actually proud of this program, but at least we get to get tested earlier and save ourselves so much.
That was Bianca Ngulube, who was registering for a free cervical cancer test in Harare. We'll have more on that story and others coming up.
Good evening, I'm Chidondrede.
And I'm Kutunai Mutetwa on VOA's Zimbabwe Today.
Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission has revised its target for eligible voters. It seeks to register by the time the country goes to elections. But some analysts and activists say the number should be raised by including those in the diaspora. Reporter Kudzai Zinawashe has the report.
Emmanuel Magade is the acting chairperson of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, known as the ZEC.
I think we were overly ambitious. We were extravagantly ambitious. Zimbabwe has a population of 15 million people, and out of those 15 million, between 50 and 55% are under 18, so they would be ineligible anyway to register. Over and above that, a significant number of our citizens are in the diaspora.
The commission originally said it aimed to get 7 million voters registered. Now it says its goal is to top 5 million. Zimbabwe's economic decline over the past two decades has resulted in millions of skilled Zimbabweans relocating to other countries in search for opportunities. The diaspora vote has been a highly contested issue, but ZEC says the ball is not in their court.
Our position as ZEC is that we would want every eligible Zimbabwean to vote, but everything has to be done in accordance with the law. As of now, people in the diaspora are ineligible to vote. So what must happen? It behoves upon the parliamentary parties, MDC, MDCT, and ZANU-PF to change the law.
Critics have urged the government to let Zimbabweans in the diaspora have a say in the running of the country. Tawanda Chimini is the director of Election Resource Center.
Our insistence is that every Zimbabwean has the right to vote, regardless of their address. So the diaspora vote, in our view, is something that is there already. Zimbabwe allows Zimbabweans in the diaspora to vote in the form of Zimbabweans on government business being afforded the right to vote via postal voting. Why can't that right be extended to every Zimbabwean?
Chimini says the constitution guarantees that all eligible voters be allowed to vote without fear or discrimination. He says to block Zimbabweans in the diaspora from voting is discrimination. Gift Muganu is an economist. He has told members of parliament that the diaspora vote is crucial to the revival of the economy.
You need to make the diaspora relevant to Zimbabwe. So as we are going for elections, they should also vote. From economic analysis, Nigeria should get about $10 billion per year from the diaspora. But when they say you are now part of the equation of the Nigerian discourse, you are going to vote, the diaspora remittance rose to $20 billion.
Muganu said, as much as his sentiments sound political, they have huge economic bearing, which needs attention. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
A new report by the independent watchdog organization, Freedom House, says that democratic principles such as election integrity and the freedom of the press weakened globally for the 12th consecutive year. Arch Puddington with Freedom House said in 2017, there were many more countries that showed declines in freedom than showed improvements. Freedom House analyzed data from 195 countries over 2017 and rated 88 countries free. 58 countries were partly free, and 49 countries were rated not free. Following the ouster of longtime leader Robert Mugabe, Freedom House ranks Zimbabwe partly free. Puddington says Zimbabwe's score declined largely because Mugabe was ousted by non-democratic means. He says if the new government makes good on its promise of reform in that democratic elections are held, Zimbabwe's score could rise. The report says the United States' status as a champion of democracy shrank in 2017. It notes the ongoing investigation of Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. Puddington also points to the role of money in campaigns and new state laws that make voting more difficult as problems for the U.S. rating.
Njani matabezulu linjani izulu kandaba sifisa ukulibikela ukuthi silethulela indaba ezimqotho ngeZimbabwe suku zonke ngo 6 am 2 pm la ngo 7 pm eZimbabwe lisibamba kumagagasi ati 909 medium wave 4930 15580 la ku 6080 short wave frequencies lila kunjalo ukusithola ebulenjini bokuzilibazisa ku Facebook ukhasi lethule VOA Ndebele.
About 1,000 women are expected to benefit from free early cervical cancer screenings being offered at Harare's Parire Nyathwa group of hospitals in partnership with Chinese institution, the Henan Provincial Maternal and Child Health Hospital. The project, which starts Wednesday, is the first time that a Zimbabwe public hospital is offering the human papillomavirus screening method, also known as the high-risk test. Rutendo Maware has the story.
Cervical cancer is the leading cause of cancer-related illness and death in women in Zimbabwe. The 2015 cancer registry says it causes just over 35% of all cancers in Zimbabwean black women. Women registering for the program say the free early screening and treatment will help them get early detection and treatment, as the cost of screening is beyond their budgets. The Cancer Association of Zimbabwe says most women have the cancer detected at late stages. Bianca Ngulube, who lost her mother to cervical cancer, was one of those registering for the free early screening and treatment. Ngulube says cancer screening and treatment in Zimbabwe is expensive, and she was happy to be registering for the early screening and treatment.
I appreciate this free program because some people can't afford such programs, so I'm here for mine. First test after years, that's 11 years ago. So I'm happy. And I'm actually proud of this program, because at least we get to get tested earlier and save ourselves so much.
Mercy Mondoga was also among the women queuing for registration at the Parire Nyathwa Viag Clinic.
Chandisonda kuti ndiuye kuzoongororwa macases andanzwa evanhu vafane cancer awandisa.
She says she is motivated to register for early screening and treatment by the number of people I know who have died from cancer. So that is why she came to register. Mondoga says this free program is really helpful to us women, and the publicity that has been given has made us women know there is free early screening and treatment being offered. Bernadette Mandasa is the nurse in charge at the clinic.
We are seeing them already, women who are now having the cervical cancer already, because they are not coming early for screening. They are presenting when they have now the symptoms due to the issue of maybe poverty. Some of them, they don't have the knowledge. And we have referred some women for the clinics for radiotherapy or chemotherapy in the gynecological oncology department.
Mandasa says this is the first time that Parire Nyathwa is screening for cervical cancer using the human papillomavirus screening.
It was being offered to my private hospital. They were ranging from 60 to 77, I think.
Dr. Ndabaning Stole, the program coordinator, says the HPV screening is widely used in developed countries.
It's a very sensitive method, this, which first world countries are using, what we're using as a bit of a low cost. But it basically means cervical cancer, if you look into the developed countries, they've managed to almost reduce it to negligible levels where you have organized screening methods.
The HPV test is said to detect cancer cells better than the pap smear alone, which Viag and other public hospitals in Zimbabwe have been using. Reporting for VOA from Harare, this is Rutendo Mawere.
Vateereri veStudio 7 tinoda kukuzivisai kuti tava nezvimwe zvirongwa zvakatanga zvatichange tichikupakurirai kubva na 6 a.m. kuseni kwega kwega na 2 p.m. masikati ega ega nechirongwa chenyu chamagaro ziva cha 7 p.m. mazuva ose. Munokwanisa kutibata pa 909 medium wave frequency, pa 4930 short wave, 15580 short wave, ne 6080 short wave mazuva ose. Musakangana kuti tichangezve tichitepfenyura pa Facebook page yedu ye VOA Shona. Kana musati mafarira Facebook page yedu, ibvai maenda ikoko motsvaga pakanzi like mubva matifarira. Tokuyeuchidzai zvakare zvirongwa izvi zvinenge zvichiitwa na 6 a.m., 2 p.m. na 7 p.m. manheru ega ega. Musakanganwe.
Zimbabwe recently saw its first stud goat auction in the country's second largest city, Bulawayo. Correspondent Adi Gondo caught hold of the convener of the country's inaugural goat auction.
Based in the Gwanda area of Zimbabwe's Matabeleland South Province, Chris Grant is one of the leading goat breeders in the country with a flock of 750 goats. He founded the Nkosi Goat Breeders Club, which organized the first auction.
I'd attended a goat auction in South Africa where I bought a whole lot of pedigree animals, and the goat auction was conducted by a club. So when I returned back to Zimbabwe, I was traveling with two other guys who breed Boer goats and I breed Kalahari Reds. I thought it was a good idea we created a club as well, pool our resources and have an auction.
Most of the goats went to black farmers, who often are newer to the goat breeding business. It gave buyers a chance to bid on a variety of breeds.
There were 34 registered buyers. Of those 34 registered buyers, only two were white buyers. The others were all black buyers. And those two white buyers only bought, one bought one animal, another one bought four. So they only bought five animals out of the 66 that were sold.
Grant is upbeat about the prospects of government support and growth in the goat farming industry. He hopes the government will engage farming experts like himself to help lead the development of the sector.
The new government has said that it wants to support farmers. I think they're saying the right things. They possibly need to start doing the right things to gain confidence. I'm sure that they understand that plumbing should be left to the plumbers. So they will engage with farmers who have the knowledge, the expertise, to help bring up the industry.
Grant says government aims to increase goat meat production to 2 million kilograms a year, up from 400 kilos a year.
They are looking at the goat industry and they are wanting to revive it and get it up to maybe 6 million livestock units, which is quite possible. We have the rainfall, we have the grazing possible to get to 6 million, 6.5 million goats in the country.
He says goat farming as a business also represents a great opportunity for creating jobs and improving workers' skills.
Like any livestock, you need to have management. So management needs hands-on work. So if farmers have 60 or 70 or 100 goats, they will need to employ someone that will look after them or a couple of people. They will need to educate those people in veterinary treatment and dipping and when they start to give birth and that sort of stuff. So labor will be needed and that labor needs to be educated. So
as far as Grant is concerned, goat farming is a business that is good for everyone.
There's no difference between white commercial farmers and black commercial farmers. We all want the same thing. We want to farm. We've been given the land by God to use. We want to use it.
According to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, 95% of the world's estimated 475 million goats are in developing countries, and 33% of the total small livestock population is in Africa. Goat breeders here say to boost production in Zimbabwe and Africa as a whole, farmers need supportive government policies and the choice of breeds that are well suited to local climates. Reporting for VOA from Bulawayo, this is Adi Gondo.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa has said that his call for the return of funds overseas is being heeded, and millions of dollars have returned. But many social media users had questions about the identity of
the identity of those who had shipped money offshore to begin with and how much has been returned. They also want to know if what Mnangagwa says is true, why the money has not been seen in Zimbabwean banks.
Emmanuel Chinyama says, "Don't ever try to fool the people. If that is true, then we should witness an improvement in terms of cash disbursements at the banks."
Philip Quenda says, "We are not kids. Tell us the names and the money returned."
Tapiwa Nashe Bakuri says, "Let there be transparency. Let the public at least know how much money has been returned and in what form."
Val Manyaro says, "Release the names and amounts. We want transparency here. We want change in bank queues."
Anna says, "Too good to be true. Only time will tell. Zimbabweans will surely hold you to your statement."
However, some users were pleased with the president's statement. Kutoto says, "Thank you, Mr. President. The evidence is showing on the ground. Yesterday, I managed to withdraw $1,000 from my bank's ATM. Thanks to the returned millions. Keep up the good work."
James Dada says, "That is very encouraging. We hope to see positive developments in our economy in the next few months."
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from Voice of America Studio 22. I'm Chidonjere in Washington, D.C. At 46 past the hour, we continue with the news.
Raila Odinga, Kenya's opposition leader, says he plans to be inaugurated as president of the country, even though Uhuru Kenyatta was sworn in late last year. Odinga, head of the National Super Alliance, NASA, today sat down with Kennedy Wandere of VOA Swahili service. Together, they discussed his insistence that he is the true president of the election. Among other things, he says his party has seen figures from Kenya's August election that prove he won, and he rejects the outcome of the October rerun. He says that Kenya is in crisis.
Crisis is as a result of the bungled elections. And it's not just presidential elections. It cuts across all the levels where the elections were held. That's the reason why you have unprecedented high number of petitions in the courts this time around.
Crisis is as a result of the bungled elections, and it's not just presidential elections. It cut across all the levels where the elections were held. That's the reason why you have unprecedented numbers of petitions in the courts this time around. He dismissed the claims by some political opponents that his plans for an inauguration is just a lever to get concessions from the government.
So we're not using the swearing in as a basis of negotiating with Uhuru Kenyatta. You have said, in fact, you don't want any stake in Uhuru Kenyatta's government. We want to be the ones who are in government.
However, Odinga says he is ready to talk with Uhuru and has a 5-point agenda for any talks.
Number one, we talked about electoral justice. Number two, we talked of ensuring judicial independence. Number three is the police reforms. Number four is restructuring and strengthening of devolution. And finally, number five is restructuring of the executive structure in the Constitution. Those are the 5-point agenda that we want to discuss.
But he is steadfast that he won't talk about Kenyatta's development agenda. His 5 items, Odinga says, are critical to governments, and in his words, they cannot be wished away. He also says he is confident these are the priorities of the Kenyan people.
We have asked Jubilee if they have another item or agenda they want to put on the table. They are free to do so. We are ready to discuss. But our agenda for swearing in is not negotiable. You say that if we cannot talk by 30th of October, of January, we are going to be sworn in. And we will then release our program thereafter.
That was Raila Odinga, leader of Kenya's NASA political party, speaking with Kennedy Wandera from VOA Swahili service today in Nairobi.
Tension continues to climb in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions, following the arrests of as many as 11 separatist leaders earlier this month in neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the southwestern capital of Bouake.
Panic gripped the residents of several towns in Cameroon's Anglophone southwest Monday as separatist groups vowed to keep up the pressure for the release of their leaders detained in Nigeria. The southwest capital was abuzz with reports that unidentified armed men were attacking schools and had reportedly kidnapped two traders. The confusion spread to Moya, Moyuka, Kumba, and other towns in the southwest. VOA could find no eyewitnesses to any alleged violence. No security officials have confirmed the reports of attacks, but panic ensued nonetheless.
It was a terrible day. Everybody was running to every direction. I first of all locked myself in my shop, but the shouting and running made me to change my mind. I trekked through the bush to my house.
VOA met textile trader Anne Manka early Tuesday at the main market in Boya. The city was quiet, but she and several other traders had decided to keep their shop closed. Boya Mayor Ekema Patrick blames rumors for the panic.
We have been moving on to assure the parents that life has regained its normalcy within the municipality.
At the government bilingual grammar school Moliko in Boya, school teacher Emmanuel Amin said barely 20% of his students had returned to class Tuesday.
Today as we speak, we have 71 students. All our teachers are in place. Maybe we have more students coming.
Southwest Regional Governor Bernard Okalia Bilai says secessionist groups are trying to manipulate the public.
We should remain vigilant. Parents should continue to protect their children and allow them to go to schools. The children have already suffered last year. It should not happen again this year. Security measures have been put in place to protect the entire population and all the activities.
The Anglophone crisis began in November 2016 when teachers and lawyers in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions went on strike. The strike devolved into violent unrest and stalemate, shuttering schools for a year. Meanwhile, separatist groups emerged calling for the two Anglophone regions to break away. In October, the secessionist groups declared a new state they call Ambazonia. The declaration sparked deadly unrest, and there have since been several clashes in Cameroon between suspected separatists and the military. The so-called president of Ambazonia and at least eight other people were arrested January 5 in Nigeria. The separatists have declared a curfew 3 days a week for residents of the southwest and northwest until their leaders are freed. In a news release emailed to news agencies Tuesday, a group identifying itself as the interim government of Ambazonia said Nigerian authorities are keeping 11 of their leaders detained incommunicado without access to lawyers or relatives. Amnesty International has expressed concern the detainees could face torture and unfair trials if extradited from Nigeria. The government of Cameroon has declined to comment on the arrest. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Boya, southwestern Cameroon.
Burundi's government recently proposed constitutional changes that would, among other things, allow President Pierre Nkurunziza to stay in office beyond 2020. Civil society groups say the government is arresting opponents of those changes in advance of an upcoming referendum. Mohamed Yusuf and Eloge Kaneza report from Nairobi.
Officially, Burundi's government has banned anyone from campaigning for or against the proposed changes to the constitution, but civil society groups accuse the government of targeting those suspected to urging voters to reject the changes. The head of Burundi's Forum for Strengthening the Civil Society, Vital Nshirimana, says people cannot make free choices.
Yeah, so far there is dozens of people, about 60 people were arrested in many sides of the country. And this is one of the signs showing that the referendum should not be fair, since those campaigning against the no are arrested, while those campaigning for the yes are not arrested.
The government says the changes are aimed at strengthening and advancing the country's laws after more than 2 years of political violence. The violence was triggered in April 2015 when President Nkurunziza announced he will run for a controversial third term. Opponents said he was violating constitutional term limits and the peace deal that ended Burundi's civil war. Now, critics believe Nkurunziza is maneuvering to stay in power beyond the end of his current term in 2020. Hamisi Sultan represents opposition party FNL, which is against the constitutional change. He was arrested on January 2nd. It is the prosecutor of the Yugi province who issued an arrest warrant against me. I was questioned and I was accused of organizing and leading a group meeting aimed at sanitizing people to vote against the proposed constitutional change. We were with friends having fun and some of them were arrested too. We were accused of participating in an illegal meeting aimed at opposing the draft constitution. Sultan was released after 3 days without charge. The president deputy spokesman, Alain Domide, says the government is educating its people on the proposed changes, but no one is allowed to advance for passing or rejecting them.
The government is explaining to the electorate the content of the constitution. I mean, some articles that are likely to change, etc. There is no campaign to vote yes or no. The campaign has not yet started. So when you teach people to vote no and the campaign has not started, you understand that you're running against the law.
Burundians will vote on the proposed changes in May. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
That is it for us this evening on VOA Zimbabwe Today. I'm Chidonjere.
And I'm Kutsunai Mutetwa. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shana and Dabela broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com. We leave you with a song by Tekno Diana.
for Diana. I dance for Diana.